Hello, I'm your host, Jody Lee Mott, and welcome to Dream Gardens. Like my last podcast, I'm doing a book spotlight rather than an interview, but I promise I will return to the interview format the next time you hear from me. Earlier this year, children's author Adam Gidwitz wrote an article for The New Yorker titled, What Makes a Children's Book Good? In it, he asked whether it's better to deem a children's book as good because of its popular appeal, or instead should we agree with C.S. Lewis, who said, I am almost inclined to set it up as a canon that a children's story which is enjoyed only by children is a bad children's story. The good ones last. A waltz which you can like only when you are waltzing is a bad waltz. The conclusion Adam came to is that the paramount consideration should be what the individual child takes from their own reading experience. If a child opens a book, he writes, reads every page of it, closes it, clutches it to his chest, and says, I love this book, then it is a good book. Do kids clutch Goosebumps to their chests? Some do. Many others clutch Where the Wild Things Are, or The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, or El Defo, because these books help them find meaning in life, be it moral, psychological, or ineffable. It's not important in the end whether a child is waltzing to Tchaikovsky or Strauss. The important thing that she is waltzing. When I read this article, I thought about those special books that I clung to myself when I was a child. For example, I clearly remember the first novel I read on my own, Tom Sawyer, and how I would drag it around with me everywhere and get lost in the caves with Tom and Becky Thatcher. But further back than that, the first book I remember that really spoke to me, that, to use Adam's metaphor, got me first waltzing, was Dolaire's Book of Greek Myths by Ingrid and Edgar Parin Dolaire. The book was published in 1962, just 2 years before I was born, one of many children's books the husband and wife created together, collaborating on both the text and the illustrations. I found it at the local library when I was just starting school. It was an enormous book, especially for a shrimp like I was, and so I had to read it either propped up on my lap or laid out on the floor. The first thing I took in were the pictures, Persephone being dragged down into Hades, Perseus cutting off the Gorgon's head, and Oedipus answering the Sphinx's riddle. They were strange and wonderful and terrifying all at the same time. I particularly remember the illustration for the story of Arachne, who's boasting about her weaving skills enraged Athena so much that she turned the poor girl into a spider so she could be a weaver forever. The picture showed a tapestry, and at the far corner was a creature with a spider's body and a girl's head with wide, terrified eyes. I know it gave me nightmares, but I kept going back to the same page again and again. It was only later that I started to read the stories themselves and fill in the mysteries of the pictures with even stranger tales of gods. This is from the beginning of the book, the story of Gaia. Gaia, the Earth, came out of the darkness so long ago that nobody knows when or how. Earth was young and lonesome, for nothing lived on her yet. Above her rose Uranus, the sky, dark and blue, set all over with sparkling stars. He was magnificent to behold, and young Earth looked up at him and fell in love with him. Sky smiled down at Earth, twinkling with his countless stars, and they were joined in love. Soon young Earth became Mother Earth, the mother of all things living. All her children loved their warm and bountiful mother, and feared their mighty father, Uranus, lord of the universe. This is the story of the birth of Athena. Athena, the goddess of wisdom, was the favorite child of Zeus. She had sprung fully grown out of her father's head. Her mother was Metis, goddess of prudence, the first wife of Zeus. He depended on her, for he needed her wise counsel, but Mother Earth warned him that, were Metis to bear him a son, their son would dethrone him as Zeus had dethroned Cronus, his father, who had dethroned his own father, Uranus. This must not happen, thought Zeus, but he could not do without her advice, so he decided to swallow her. Slyly he proposed that they play a game of changing shapes, and Metis, forgetting her prudence, playfully turned herself into all kinds of animals, big and small. Just as she had taken on the shape of a little fly, Zeus opened wide his mouth, took a deep breath, and zip, he swallowed the fly. Ever after, Metis sat in his head and guided him from there. Now it happened that Metis was going to have a daughter, and she sat inside Zeus's head hammering out a helmet and weaving a splendid robe for the coming child. Soon Zeus began to suffer from pounding headaches and cried out in agony. All the gods came running to help him, and skilled Hephaestus grabbed his tools and split open his father's skull. Out sprang Athena, wearing the robe and the helmet, her gray eyes flashing. Thunder roared, and the gods stood in awe. And this is how the book ends. Everything must come to an end, and so did the rule of Zeus and the other Olympian gods. All that is left of their glory on earth are broken temples and noble statues. Also the muses fell silent, but their songs live on to this very day, and the constellations put up by the gods still glitter on the dark blue vault of the sky. When I look at the book now, I try to think what it was about those pages and illustrations that were so compelling to me when I was young. The gods themselves, despite all their powers, acted like spoiled and impetuous children, and even the heroes don't always act so heroically. There's a lot of violence and deception and backstabbing and all-around nastiness. These were not the kind of people I ever wanted to spend any time with. Except I did, just about every time I visited the library. Part of it was, I think, that the stories were so alien to my own day-to-day experience that they fed my imagination and opened my mind to the possibilities of new worlds and new situations and other books. After all, if you can accept the idea of a goddess bursting out of her father's head as an adult wearing full armor, anything else seems possible. So am I saying this is the best book ever, and you should rush right out and get it and read it from cover to cover, and I will guarantee you will fall in love with it? No, of course not. But it was, for me, for a few years, the book I claimed for myself and lost myself in for a few hours a week. It helped shape me as a reader and as a writer, and even as the person I am today. It was only one of many things that did that, but it was important. It was the book that spoke to me first and let me connect to other books. It was the first step I took in the waltz that's still playing in my head more than 45 years later, and I hope will keep playing until the last measure sounds. Thank you for joining me on Dream Gardens. The theme music, titled All Together, is provided courtesy of Purple Planet Music. You can visit them at www.purple-planet.com. Podcast cover art is provided by Creative Pro 180, courtesy of Fiverr, which can be found at www.fiverr.com. You can find out more about me at jleemott.com. That's jleemott.com. Or contact me at jodymott@gmail.com. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep growing, and keep reading.